Thank you for attending 2020 Sunstone Digital Symposium, session 371, titled Harnessing the Power of Vulnerability as a Spiritual Practice. We're glad you are here. The audio from this session will be available for purchase at sunstone.org after the symposium. The video recording of this session will be available in the Whova app for the remainder of 2020. Please type your questions into the Whova app to be addressed during the Q&A. At Sunstone, we are making it a goal to build a community that allows many ways for people to express their faith. Our tagline is, "There is more than one way to Mormon." We invite you to help us build a community where all paths are given space to be better understood. Please support us in our mission by making a donation and subscribing at sunstone.org. About this presentation, vulnerability has been an underappreciated and underutilized virtue in LDS culture. Through her research, Brené Brown has opened up a global conversation about the power of vulnerability in our personal and institutional lives. In this session, we will talk about how vulnerability could help the church and its members live up to their Christian potential more fully, and how it could help those who are grappling with their faith move through their grief empowered with more support, hope, and confidence. I'll take a second to introduce you to our speakers before we begin. Sarah Hughes-Zabawa is a licensed clinical social worker, certified Daring Way facilitator, and wellness coach working with Symmetry Solutions to offer in-person and online therapy and wellness coaching. Sarah often works with individuals, couples, and families who are impacted by a shift in their spiritual beliefs and who are seeking support in entering this new awakening with better balance, healthier boundaries, and improved trust in themselves moving forward in a meaningful way. Janice Spangler is a graduate of the University of Utah, Integral Coaching Canada, and the Living School. She works as an integral professional life coach with Symmetry Solutions, specializing in coaching individuals, couples, and families affected by the difficulties of shifting faith. She is a frequent guest on Mormon-themed podcasts, a speaker at conferences, workshops, firesides, retreats, and a guest lecturer at BYU on issues of faith and development. I'll now give the floor to our presenters. Thank you all for being here.
All right. Thank you, CJ, for moderating this session. We really appreciate you. Okay, we're going to be talking about vulnerability as a spiritual practice. Sarah and I, as we were getting this presentation together, we talked about how this is really like teaching the Relief Society lesson of our dreams, or Sunday school class of our dreams. I spent some time as a Relief Society teacher, and I was always trying to make things just so that I wouldn't scare anybody. And we just love Sunstone because we're able to not have to worry about that so much. We have such an open audience, so I just love Sunstone for that reason. So this subject of vulnerability and spirituality, both of these are subjects that Sarah and I hold near and dear to our heart. We're very passionate about these subjects. And the genesis of this came when I was listening to an interview on the On Being podcast with my new favorite poet, David White. If you don't know him, you'll know a little bit more about him by the end of this session. You will see that we have borrowed heavily from his beautiful words. And part of that is because I believe issues of vulnerability and spirituality are really hard to get to the real core of by just speaking about them. Mm-hmm. They are not subjects that lend themselves well to the finite words that we use to describe them. So we just felt like, poetry and other forms of art are really a way in for us to have an experience and to really taste and feel what spirituality can be as we use some vulnerability with it. So as we said, please, any time during the session that you have a question that occurs to you, please feel free to put it into the Whova app, and we will be taking questions at the end of our session. So anything else you want to add to that, Sarah?
I just want to add that, one, I feel so grateful Jana was the creator of this idea after listening to that podcast. And Jana and I want to also honor that vulnerability in our own lives has both broken us open and has created a deep and profound appreciation for the practice. And we'll talk about that it is both heartbreaking and beautiful. And so that we are simply sisters in this journey with you. We're in it with you fully. So we want to talk about So what is vulnerability? I love this definition from Brené Brown. The definition of vulnerability is uncertainty, risk, and emotional exposure. But vulnerability is not weakness. It's our most accurate measure of courage. The word courage, if you think about it from its French origin, is le cœur, which means the heart. Vulnerability is the practice of opening and showing someone our heart. And for some of you in the audience, you might think like, hell no, no way, Jose. Like, not interested in doing that, right? Who wants to sign up for uncertainty, risk, and emotional exposure? And yet Jan and I will be discussing about that truthfully, vulnerability is not something we can really opt out of if we're truly looking for honest connection. The choice of the question about vulnerability is not if we're going to be vulnerable or not. Every moment of our day has aspects of vulnerability. The question is, are we going to engage with it or not? Are we going to be a part of this process so that we feel like we are embodied and really fully awake to the choices and decisions we're making? What is it not? This is hard. It is not confession or oversharing. That's different for us within an LDS context. It is not weakness. And like I just mentioned, it's not necessarily optional. If we are going to be human, there is going to be vulnerability. It's part of the process. The question is, are we going to step into it? Are we going to dance with it or not?
Okay, so we're going to move into talking about how we have touched on vulnerability already within our congregations. And you'll see as we go through this, there have been some, we have limitations in the way that we've been able to step into this because Sarah and I talked about this. Vulnerability is not really a value that we have intentionally embraced as an organization or as a people. And I think there's a growing feeling that this is necessary, but not necessarily within the mainstream church. So we want to talk about some of the ways that we have access to it, we talk about it, and we at least touch on it, even if we're not fully embracing it. So there are some scriptural examples. There are just a few here. This is not an exhaustive list by any stretch of the imagination. But in 2 Nephi, chapter 4, we get Nephi's lament. We see him get a little vulnerable. We see him talk about some of his weaknesses and the sorrows that it brings him. And we also see him leaning into some trust, of trust in the Lord to help him deal with that. In Ether and Corinthians, these references are just references to scripture that talk about acknowledging that we have weakness. And then in the Lamentations and the Psalms, this is something where we see examples of how people are really embracing their sorrow, their real struggles, and talking about it and not being afraid to get angry, get upset, and express that with God. And that is definitely not something we have embraced fully as a culture, but we have some examples of it in our canon. In our faith community, so in church, we have touched on some of these things. Personal revelation is something where it has the capacity to be vulnerable, to invite us into a vulnerable spiritual journey. But we really then kind of squash that with how structured and within the rules and with our conformity, those pressures for conformity within our culture. It's really, we're not exploring this to the point that we could in a robust way if we embraced a way to do it far more vulnerably.
Can I mention something?
Go ahead. Yes, yeah. Please.
And even within the scope of personal revelation, we feel like we're entitled to say what is personal reservation and what is not, right? So let's say your personal revelation is, you know, I'm really recognizing I need to step away and do a sabbatical to kind of honor my soul, and that church is too painful. And yet many people would say, because that doesn't go with a church attendance on a regular basis, that personal revelation is wrong. Right.
Exactly. And thank you for saying that, because that's exactly what I'm talking about, right? With this, we squash it. Like we give a lot of lip service. And, you know, the current leader, President Nelson, he talks about personal revelation a lot, but then everything else, when he talks about it, it's more of a confirmation. It's a confirmation model, not a really tap into where your soul is taking you spiritually and what is good for your spiritual development.
Love that.
So in testimony meeting, in commenting in church, these are times when we have the ability to get a little bit vulnerable. When we're called on missions and that decision to go to a different place and to leave home and not really knowing what that experience is going to be for us and having all kinds of questions about whether if that's going to be a good decision for us, and if we're going to be able to handle the separation from family and friends, like that is a vulnerable move to move into that. In our ministering versus home teaching and visiting teaching, I kind of include them both because I don't really feel like we have fully moved into a ministering model yet. Bless us, I think we're trying. But we're much more doing home and visiting teaching, but calling it ministering, and then just not having to report on it monthly. That's kind of how I feel about it. That's been my experience with it. But if we really embraced ministering, if we really embraced that's an area where we could really move into more vulnerability with a person that we are really caring for and having a personal relationship with and building some trust and rapport. Service. We're very service-minded. We love to serve. We hate to be served. Mm-hmm. We really hate it. And I think partially, at least, or maybe a good part of it, is because it is very vulnerable. We're putting ourselves in a vulnerable space. And I think this is one of those places in our current practice that really highlights how uncomfortable we are with vulnerability. So bishops interviews is another opportunity to get vulnerable, although, and we'll talk about this later as well, but it is also a place where it's one way. It's not a reciprocal vulnerable moment. So that can be problematic. Celebrating the converse journey. So we love vulnerability and bravery in people who have decided to join our faith. We love that. We love those stories. We love all the sacrifices that they have made to join us. And we don't have that same view. Once you've joined us, now you're with us. And if there's no more vulnerable spiritual journey beyond that. And for the rest of us who have maybe grown up in the church, we don't so much celebrate that convert journey within ourselves into something new. Mm-hmm.
Let's talk a little bit about the kind of the continued cultural barriers to vulnerability. So we talked about like where we've tasted it, right? There's that beginning emergence. So oftentimes, and I go back to that testimony example, it's around what we are certain with, which Jana is going to talk about with us. Some of the fears that can come forward when we're wrestling with vulnerability and spiritual vulnerability is discomfort. And we have a cultural narrative that discomfort might not be able to be trusted, right? So we have narratives of, if it's not warm and fuzzy and beautiful, is the spirit involved? Has the spirit fled when we step into moments of doubt and discomfort? And there's kind of a cultural warning. If it's not beautiful, if it's not easy, then something is wrong. And yet the truthfulness is, I have never stepped into a moment of discomfort or vulnerability or courage without there being a sense of mass discomfort. There's risk, right, Jana?
Yeah, absolutely. And I just want to just add that it's situational, right? If you are having discomfort over a decision to get married in the temple, mm-hmm. or to go on a mission, that's okay discomfort, mm-hmm. right? Because that is more about we're certain that that is a good choice for us because the institution has told us that is a good choice for us, mm-hmm. right? But if in any other circumstance, you know, if you're wondering if a sabbatical is good for you, if you're mm-hmm. if you're wrestling with other with questions and doubt, then they are going to then the narrative shifts, mm-hmm. and that is no longer a courageous act. That is the sparrow giving you a warning.
So, in many ways, that stunted our development of stepping into risk and vulnerability, especially with our deep questions of what spiritually moves us, what is or is not okay with our soul. So once again, if this is feeling for our audience, like I've been told that, and also vulnerability feels scary, it's because we have walked a line where we haven't given permission or honored that you are doing nothing wrong by feeling uncomfortable. Discomfort is the reality of vulnerability, right? Very clearly, there is a real risk of not belonging, right? If we're vulnerable and say, I'm really wrestling with the reality of polygamy, that does not sit well with my soul. Being able to name that honestly, there is risk of being considered less than, less worthy, less believing. So if there's resistance here, it makes sense. It's an evolutionary process that we avoid discomfort. We avoid things that provide threat to us. And to be a part of a community that is so community and belonging focused, it makes sense that we're not going to go there easily. We can feel limited by being honest. There's the deep question of, will I have a temple recommend still? Will I be able to serve and love my fellow man? Will I be able to speak in church anymore? Right? So there's fears that come forward. Punishment is real, right? So many of the clients that Jana and I see, the truthfulness of what they're wrestling with, they're worried if there will be limitations, if not punishment, meaning removing privileges like a temple recommend. And also ostracization. Have we not also witnessed, as we're grappling with our faith, those who have chosen to leave or have been honest about their doubts and what the community has done to them? The fear is real.
Absolutely. And because of those fears being real, we have certain cultural norms that have grown around this to help keep us protected from vulnerability and from the fears that it brings up. I think being human, we have, whether we recognize it or not, some existential fears. Take someone on an authentic spiritual journey that it starts to vary from the group and from their upbringing. And these issues come up a lot. Sarah and I see this a lot in our office as well, people grappling with that. So one of the ways we do this is to bring certainty. Mm-hmm. We are so certain about the way that we talk about our faith. The way we talk about faith is very concrete. Our testimonies are based on very concrete things, mm-hmm. and they are affirmations of beliefs. And that helps keep us from having to take a really authentic, scary journey where we may not see the road in front of us.
And Jana, I just want to add that not only are we certain that we have truth in our culture, we are certain that we are the one true church.
Yes. We're really certain. Right?
We're loving the certainty.
We love it. We love the structure. And to give a nod to the structure, structure is very good for our development in early stages of faith development. Having certainty as a youth can be a really, really healthy thing as we build our identities. But it does not necessarily help us in later stages of development to move into something deeper and more authentic. Mm-hmm. We tend to have a transactional religion. This is not unique to Mormonism. This is this is very, very much the case with most organized religion in the West. That is, we check off the boxes, and that's how we know that we're on the right track. That's how we know that we are spiritually growing. That is what it feels like to us, is if we can check off the boxes, we feel good, and it's more of a transactional religion. That kind of a transactional religion, however, does not tend to really dig deep into a transformation process. Mm-hmm. It doesn't necessarily enable us to go on an inner journey and see where maybe our own shadow work is, or our inner work, or how can I more fully embody the characteristics of Jesus Christ, of, you know, the open heart and the care and the pastoral care. We tend to also move to positivity, which can be toxic the way that we do it. It kind of goes along with the spiritual bypassing. They're kind of hand in hand, which is, you know, if we're having a hard time, if something is not going well, because we're very uncomfortable with those feelings of discomfort and sadness, and it's really hard for us to see someone else be sad, we tend to put a positive spin on all of those experiences. Unfortunately, what that does is it bypasses our growth. It bypasses the real healing that comes from true empathy, which is reaching down into ourselves and allowing ourselves to feel and really mourn with the person who is mourning. We have to get in that with them, in that place. And it's just not, it's not a comfortable place to go. So what we mean by spiritual bypassing is using positivity, using religion, using spirituality to just be in a place that makes us feel good. The philosopher Jacob Needleman said, don't make religion out of your finest moments or your best moments. I'm paraphrasing a little bit. But that's what we tend to do. Mm-hmm. We tend to structure it so that we can stay safe and good and on the right track and feeling good and feeling what we imagine is the spirit in all of the good fuzzy feelings. Mm-hmm. This can also lead to some stunted grief is one of the things that we do. When we're in a deep grief process, we protect, and our theology helps protect us from this. Like, you will see your loved one again. And it feels like we're being very comforting in that. But what we have noticed in our work is that there's a lot of grief that did not fully run its course when we shortcut it with trying to go to the positive. And so a lot of people, as they go through a deeper faith journey, will find that they have not fully mourned things in their past, that they've just shoved on the shelf by just reminding themselves anytime they feel bad that I can just feel good. I can just give this over to the Savior and I can feel good.
I appreciate that, Jenna. So, team, we can't necessarily lean into vulnerability safely because there's risk, right? There's that open-hearted courage, but we can lean into vulnerability more wisely. Our patron saint of social work, Brené Brown, and probably Faith Transition, talks about an acronym about how we build trust. One, trust within ourselves, and then trust with others. And the acronym is BRAVING. And the very first begins with boundaries. I want to use the work of our dear friend, Wendy Christian. And you can find a little, Wendy talks more about this in with Gina Colvin in a Thoughtful Faith podcast on enmeshed family systems. But I want you to think about boundaries as if it was a home. I want to think about your soul as if it was a home or a house. So oftentimes we have very poor boundaries in Mormonism. We do community and service beautifully. Boundaries, we might get an F team. We think that vulnerability is confession. Right? We think about coming forward to a bishop and telling them everything that we've done wrong is vulnerable. And while it's a part of it, we've been taught that with the most intimate parts of our life, which for me, let's think about that as a bedroom. Usually my bedroom's a little bit more messy. Intimate things happen there. It's where I get dressed. It's where I have my underwear, right? Like, it's an intimate space. But within Mormonism, we have taken almost strangers, let's say using the analogy of a bishop, and walking them straight to our bedroom, right? I've let someone from the, without knowing them, straight into my soul. I want you to think about your soul as a house. What is healthy? So for example, for someone that I barely know, I'm going to open the door and see if they're safe, if they're trustworthy, if they're someone that I know and would like to invite into my soul. Maybe I'll move them to the formal living room and we'll sit there and have conversations that are a little bit safer to see if my heart is safe, that if I'd like them to invite them into my kitchen table, where maybe that conversation is a little bit more open, a little bit more real. And if someone has truthfully earned my trust, then maybe they'll be moved into the most intimate parts of my life. But because we haven't learned that we have the permission to set boundaries, this is where vulnerability in the beginning of our faith awakenings can look like oversharing. This is like when we, and I want to have all the love and compassion to anyone listening that Jana and I have done it both all the wrong ways and then are learning to do some healthier, wiser ways. So for some of us, that's going straight up to the pulpit during testimony meeting where we think we're being vulnerable, right? Where we think this is how we do it in Mormonism, and we lay out all of our doubts. How else would we have known how to do that, right? There needs to be sincere love and compassion in the journey. But I also want you to have the permission to really think, has this person earned the right and the trust into the most intimate parts of my existence? And sometimes that means we, certain members of our lives, like our family, are disqualified of that because they haven't shown that they're trustworthy at the door level. Another conversation about boundaries is, Wendy talks about three types of boundaries. One are boundaries that are internal. So this is example when you're sitting at church and you hear something come over the pulpit and you are like, that does not work with me. That insults my soul. Internally, you can say to yourself, nope, no, that's not my truth. Another boundary is a boundary in which we speak, which would be, let's say we're in gospel doctrine class and someone talks about an LGBTQ issue that within yourself, you know, you have to say something differently, right? That is a boundary that is spoken. My experience has been different. I feel like my Christian understanding is that I love and honor my LGBTQ plus brothers and sisters. That is a boundary spoken. Then there's the boundary of action. For many times, let's say we're back in that gospel doctrine class, that is removing ourselves from that experience. I will not sit in a space where I'm not safe. Right? And so I want you to have a new understanding about boundaries and because if we're going to do this vulnerable work to trust ourselves and to trust others, we have to have healthy boundaries. And boundaries are simply what is or is not okay with you. And where Jan and I see some of the greatest wrestle with our clients is what emerges right now is what is okay or not okay with them. They're having conflict with the culture or their families. Reliability. You do what you say you'll do, right? So I want to think about trustworthiness. This is hard. We don't see the same reliability within the church institution as we are expected to have within ourselves. We're expected to be honest and open. The church is wrestling with being honest and open and transparent about its history. This is where some severance and trust can come forward. The other is accountability. We own our mistakes, we apologize, and we make amends. And as you're on this faith awakening journey, I want to give you the permission to circle back. There's a funny meme that says, I'm sorry for the things I said when I was Mormon. Sometimes we need to say, I'm sorry for the things I said when I wasn't nuanced, or I'm sorry for the things I said when I never experienced doubt. Right? So we, within our family systems, within our community, we can go and do that amends work. Also that accountability work. At the same time, recognize that the church isn't equally accountable to us. That's a really hard relationship to build trust in once it's been severed. The vault. We don't share information or experiences that are not yours to share. So as you open yourself up to these experiences, think about who is trustworthy. Who can you talk to and know it will go no farther? For me, that Jana has been one of those people. A hard part is sometimes we think those bishops are those people who can be vaults, and then it finds out our information is in ward council. Right? We are trustworthy if we know we are safe in what we say. Integrity. Choose courage over comfort. When we are in alignment with our integrity, it's going to be uncomfortable sometimes. So choose what is right over what's fun, what's fast, or easy. We choose a practice of values rather than simply professing them. This is where we have to grow as a community, because we're really good at standing up and professing. And then when it gets uncomfortable, how good are we at listening and honoring our integrity? Non-judgment. I can ask for what I need, and you can ask for what you need. And we can talk about how we feel without judgment. Culturally, we are not there yet, which is why all of us in this path need to find a community and a friend where we can be authentically open and honest about our doubts, our joys, and our hopes without judgment. Once again, we haven't figured out how to do this at times. And if it feels sticky, it's because it is. Generosity. We extend the most generous interpretation of possible to the intentions, words, and actions of others. That includes ourselves. Are we being generous with ourselves in our spiritual practice? Are we doing our best to be generous with others? This is what allows us to be braving, and it also allows us to wrestle and practice vulnerability a little bit more wisely. Brené, I love her definition of spirituality. And so this is what Jana and I are wrestling with. So what is this intersection between vulnerability and spirituality that we want to talk about? Spirituality is recognizing and celebrating that we are all intricately connected to each other by a power greater than all of us. And that our connection to that power and to one another is grounded in love and compassion. Practicing spirituality brings a sense of perspective, meaning, and purpose to our lives.
Thank you. Yeah, so I want to set up this little quote by Glennon Doyle. As Sarah and I were talking about where this intersection is, why is vulnerability so important to spirituality? You know, when we are vulnerable, when we are really checking in with ourselves, and when we are following a path that is scary to take because it has not been laid out in front of us, often when that starts to happen, inevitably, I will say this with confidence, inevitably you will come up against something you have learned, either culturally, sometimes doctrinally, within your faith. It is going to happen. It is one of the hallmarks that you are entering into a place where you're taking your spirituality into your, and individualizing it to yourself and being led authentically from your heart. And often, I see this all the time, and I experienced it, right? We start to feel conflict, and we start to wonder if we are at odds with God. We start to wonder if we have gone off the path. And so I love this affirmation that Glennon Doyle talks about in her book, Untamed, when she's addressing this. She says, perhaps the God conflict, the conflict we feel like we're in with God, perhaps it is not just about God. Perhaps it is God. And what we really need to challenge is the culture and the rules and the way that we have taken in our spirituality up to that point. Mm-hmm. And I love that she says, listen deep. This is a time to listen deep. When you feel that conflict, it's a time to go in and listen to your soul and see what is coming up.
I love Glennon's example in the book, Jana, in Untamed, that she went into her closet. So when she was wrestling with, this is what I was told what was right, and then this is what I think my body, mind, spirit is telling me, she would literally go into the closet, shut the door, sit down, and talk about sit in her knowing. Can we practice listening deep and sitting in our knowing.
I think one of the fears we have around that, right, is that what if I'm just kidding myself? What if I, you know, so it is important to have companions. It is important mm-hmm. to have touch points along the way as we go through this, to have community, to have other people. And this is what makes this hard, because there are very few people really taking that courageous journey.
And we weren't meant to do it alone, right, Jenna?
Absolutely. Absolutely. So I love this poem. And we're going to share this in a few other poems. And I would just, as we read it, I would just invite you to just put yourself really into the feelings and into your body of what is coming up for you as you read this. I heard David White set up this poem of what he was thinking as he wrote it. And what he talked about is that he really feels like when he's connecting with people, that what people believe is the least interesting thing about them. And he feels like those beliefs are the things that actually make boundaries between us. It draws lines between us. And so this was a poem expressing what feels more alive to him. And as it relates to us in our culture, as I talked about faith being something that we imagine is just beliefs. Could this invite a new feeling about what faith can be in your life?
Mm-hmm. So everyone close your eyes. Just listen. It doesn't interest me if there is one God or many gods. I want to know if you belong or feel abandoned, if you know despair or can see it in others. I want to know if you are prepared to live in the world with its harsh need to change you, if you can look back with firm eyes saying, "This is where I stand." I want to know if you know how to melt into that fierce heat of living, falling toward the center of your longing. I want to read that one sentence again. I want to know if you know how to melt into that fierce heat of living, falling toward the center of your longing. I want to know if you are willing to live day by day with the consequence of love and that bitter, unwanted passion of your sure defeat. I have heard in that fierce embrace, even the gods speak of God.
I just love that poem. That one gives me all the chills, right? It's amazing. But that idea that the world has a harsh need to change you, that always hits me.
And can we stand firm in our knowing, Jana, that one, the world will always want to change us.
Absolutely. And I'm going to actually come back to that phrase, the consequence of love and the bitter, unwanted passion of your sure defeat. Mm-hmm. It describes very well what we go through when we start to touch into love and vulnerability. Mm-hmm. Okay. So why is Trinity showing up in the middle of a Mormon conference about faith in our community? So for those of you who know me, and in the introductions, you heard that I was a graduate of the Living School. So just know that I've studied with Father Richard Rohr. If you don't know who he is, look him up. He has a lot of spiritual depth to him that is very applicable to faith journey. And I studied at his school for a couple of years, and I started to learn a lot about Trinity. It was one of the hardest concepts for me because of my ideas about that going in. In my upbringing in the LDS faith, Trinity was to be mocked. It was not really to be embraced. But I love the way that Richard Rohr describes Trinity. And he used the example of a water wheel. And I think this explains well. This is another good analogy for what we are talking about in the intersection of vulnerability and faith. So he says, imagine a water wheel with three buckets, one for each member of the Trinity. So one thing about the nature of the Trinity is that they are always in motion. Always in motion. In fact, they have a name for this, the perichoresis, the divine dance. And it's to remind us that none of this is static, and that Trinity and life is all about relationship, as we have mentioned. So each of these buckets, as it goes around the wheel, it will empty, and it will empty itself completely out. Knowing that it is in this divine dance. It will come around and it will be completely filled on the next time around. That emptying out is a very vulnerable move. If we are emptying out everything that we have all the time, knowing that we can be refilled, I mean, that is a cultural shift for us, because I don't know if you've noticed, but Mormonism tends to live in more of a scarcity kind of a feeling, definitely around resources, self-reliance. And I'm not saying these are not, these can be good traits, but they have, they're double-edged swords. Mm-hmm. So sometimes you end up hoarding a whole bunch of money because of the scarcity model, rather than emptying out is a trust. It is a trust move. Faith is all about trust, knowing that you will be refilled. Mm-hmm. I love that image.
Jen and I think where we've gotten stuck as a culture is faith was about certainty, yes, instead of faith as this very vulnerable, raw wrestle of, I am trusting something I do not know or do not see.
Yes. So we do that. We do that in relationship. Mm-hmm. We do it with our resources. We need to hold it close to the chest. Mm-hmm. And it's a scarcity model rather than a win-win. When we empty out, it will come back to us. This idea comes through many, many wisdom traditions.
Right? What I love too, Jen, is we had a question before from one of our audience members of like, do we have to stay vulnerable all the time? And even when you think about the image of the water wheel, mm-hmm. We might empty up, we might open our heart and show our courage, but we also have to have moments of deep replenishment and receiving before going back in. So no, we can't stay vulnerable 24/7. We have to practice joy and self-care and think about what is our water, what fills us back up to.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Beautiful. Okay. So this book, The Wisdom of Unknowing. So in one of the hallmarks of a deeper faith journey is uncertainty. We do not grow. Certainty is one of the surest ways to make sure you do not develop, is having to have certainty and just living into certainty. We grow when we stretch. We grow when we're uncertain and when we're okay with being uncertain. It's so tempting to want to order things all, you know, be certain, line our ducks all up in a row and know exactly what's coming. But the growth comes from that discomfort of stepping into the uncertain. So in her book, The Wisdom of Unknowing, Estelle Frankel observes these traits that come out of taking that uncertain journey. What she's noticed is it leads to rapid spiritual growth. And I see this. I don't know how many people, if you've experienced this yourself or seen others. It's one of the things that, you know, I'm in a mixed faith marriage. I have a very believing husband. And I think it confuses him. Because as I've taken a faith journey that makes him kind of nervous at times, the one thing he has said is that, well, I have to admit you're a better person. You have to admit, I've seen growth. He's seen growth in our the way I deal with our relationship and other things. There is rapid spiritual growth that happens because also, I will mention, it's been really, really painful. It's been really, 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 really painful. It can enable courage, creativity, curiosity, an open mind that is not cultivated by a closed down certain space. It allows for more acceptance when life doesn't work out the way we thought it would. This is another thing that I have noticed, is that those who have gotten really comfortable with uncertainty, I've noticed they have had a slightly gentler move into this crazy world we live in now, mm-hmm. in this COVID world. People who need certainty seem to be having a much more difficult time, because the uncertainty has now been forced on you, right? Mm-hmm. So if you're better at tapping into the uncertainty, when something happens that's unexpected, you already are a little bit practiced. You're a little bit practiced at the discomfort, recognizing it and saying, you know what? I'm resourced. I know it will be okay. I can find a way through that. It opens you to diversity of thought. and ways of living. And I love this one. It helps us be defined by what we want rather than by what we fear. Mm-hmm. That's such a more, to use a Brené phrase, it is such a more wholehearted way of approaching your life.
Mm-hmm. I love that. Defined by what we want, not by fear.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So important. Is there anything you want to say here before I introduce the next clip?
Go for it.
Okay. So this next clip, this is a clip from Hamilton, and in an effort to not spoil, I'm going to try not to give too many details of exactly what's happening, but just enough for you to feel what is happening here. This is a scene where Hamilton and his wife, his wife has experienced some big betrayals. Hamilton has made some big, terrible decisions that have been really difficult in their relationship. He has made a number of terrible decisions. Things are not going well for him. They've both experienced an enormous, enormous loss, shared loss with family. And Eliza has been in a space, his wife has been in a space of, you're dead to me. I can't deal. And Hamilton has really not done a whole lot to try to regain that trust. But they are in this moment of extreme grief. The reason we want to show you this is because you look at this slide of the uncertainty and all of these amazing things that can come from vulnerability. It comes with a warning. It's a double-edged sword. So often we have numbed throughout our life, numbed the discomfort of the uncertainty. When we stop numbing, because you cannot selectively numb experience, we've also been numbing the joy. So there is a higher high, but we also feel some of the difficulty and the bitterness of this experience as well. And we just want to note that even opening yourself up to grace from yourself, from others, can be a painful experience. So I was really struck by this moment in Hamilton, and I would just like you to pay attention to the words sung, and I would love for you to pay attention to the emotion that we witness in Alexander Hamilton.
Yeah, for those who are just listening, this would be a good point time to actually look at the screen, because we want you to look at Hamilton's face and look at the complexity that it's shown.
Moments that the words don't reach, there's a grace too powerful to name. We push away what we can never understand. We push away the unimaginable. They are standing in the garden, Alexander by Eliza's side. She takes his hand. It's quiet up town.
Forgiveness. Can you imagine? Forgiveness. Can you imagine? You see him in the street, talking by his side, talking by his side.
It takes my breath away every time I see that. This is a universal thing we just kind of intuitively know. There's this moment, we could have shown the moment in Les Mis where the bishop gives forgiveness to Valjean that sets him on a completely different place in life. There is this thing we know as humans that deep healing comes from looking at the wound, from exposing the wound, from releasing the shame. And we have to get vulnerable to do that. But you can see the excruciating pain. I mean, I cry every time I see these things. If I let myself really get into it, I cry. It's painful. Mm-hmm. It actually is a painful moment. Mm-hmm. And stepping into this vulnerability, first of all, it's not going to be quick. You don't just have, oh, I'm vulnerable now. This is a lifelong, years-long journey. Mm-hmm. You do see enlightenment along the way and experience, but it continues to be hard. So realistic expectations and mm-hmm. and also just knowing how much we really do need to care for ourselves. But we can see how you can access this through another person, through another person's forgiveness. We also have that ability to do that for ourselves.
Are we extending ourselves that same amount of grace in our journey? It's a really important question.
Absolutely. So this
very generous.
Okay. Another David White poem. Okay, so again, get into your bodies, really hear what this is trying to say. So this is just to evoke, it's called Sweet Darkness, which I love, because there's so much that can happen in our journeys into the dark. That's what a vulnerable journey is. It's into something we cannot see, the road ahead. But there is such a richness that can come from really following that, following our deep connectedness to something bigger than ourselves. So I will read this, and I may repeat some parts. I listen to David White a lot, and when he reads his own poetry, he repeats.
I asked Janet to do it in the Irish accent, but she said no, which...
I wish I had that gift. I hear it in the Irish accent every time I hear his poetry. So forgive me if I repeat a few parts. When your eyes are tired, the world is tired also. When your vision has gone, no part of the world can find you. Time to go into the dark, where the night has eyes to recognize its own. Time to go into the dark, where the night has eyes to recognize its own. There, you can be sure that you are not beyond love. The dark will be your womb tonight. The night will give you a horizon further than you can see. You must learn one thing. You must learn one thing. The world was made to be free in. Give up all other worlds except the one to which you belong. Sometimes it takes darkness and the sweet confinement of your aloneness to learn anything or anyone that does not bring you alive is too small for you. Anything or anyone that does not bring you alive is too small for you. And just so you know, the emphasis added there is ours. Mm-hmm. That is not in the poem. It's not the way it's written, but it takes the darkness and the sweet confinement of your aloneness. This journey at the core, we need other people to support us through it, but at the core, this journey is yours. Mm-hmm. This journey is individual. It's not going to look like anybody else's.
Yeah. Jenna, can I speak to that? And it just brings to mind that so much of Mormonism, and remind, will you tell everyone what Richard said about Mormons? Because it matters.
Yes. He has a framing, a whole book on it called Falling Upward about the first and second half of life of spirituality. And as I tell you what he said, you'll kind of intuitively know what this means. The first half of life, when he found out that I was a Mormon, he says, "Oh, Mormons." He says, "You do first half of life better than anyone." And he said, "Really, I mean it, better than anyone." Mm-hmm. And you have almost no second half of life. Mm-hmm. And I think if you see that from where he's seeing it outside of the faith, if you're just looking at what our curriculum is and our, mm-hmm. our related material, I think he's spot on.
Yeah, and why that brings up for me, Jenna, is if we frame this from Fowler's stages of faith development, Mormonism and our doctrine and our community does stage 1 through 3 beautifully, because it's rooted in community, it's rooted in identity, and it's rooted in certainty. Mm-hmm. And yet stage 4, which is typically we enter at age like 21, like 19 to 23 is kind of this age range where we go out into the world and we're supposed to really start getting messy and clear about like what we love and what resonates with us. We don't do that. We usually get married in the temple at that age, right? I did. And so
it kind of, yeah. We're following strict rules, right?
Very strict rules. So why I love that is because where the sweet darkness comes forward is if we're going to do this spiritual path and the spiritual wrestle with vulnerability and spirituality, we are not going to be handed a manual. to do that. And we've been reliant on our church community to give us our materials, to give us our next steps, to give us our assignments, literally our spiritual assignments. And so I want to name, if this feels different and like lonely and vulnerable and kind of just like free, open, like David says, free, that is both beautiful and terrifying. And it's because it is now our responsibility and our ownership. It's our dreaming.
Absolutely, so well said.
So I'm going to begin by reading another reminder by David. And David was talking to Christina Tippett with regarding organizations and vulnerability. And he says, organizations have to get over the idea that you can occupy a position of responsibility and that you can have courageous conversations without being vulnerable. David recognizes there is no ability to be courageous without vulnerable. And if we're going to be responsible, we're going to have to be both, right? Courageous and vulnerable. We hope we can arrange it. This is what we do as humans. We hope we can arrange it properly so we don't have to say we're sorry. I just want to pause there. I have not received any formal apologies for the spiritual wounds I've experienced. I don't know about you, Jenna. Did you get a letter?
I have not.
I have not either. Anything else you want to say about that, Jenna?
Yeah, just, I mean, this is actually the part of the interview in On Being that made me think of our faith, right? It made me think of the opportunities that we are missing in incorporating vulnerability into this as a spiritual path. Mm-hmm. It is part of a genuine spiritual path and pastoral care. There's really no way around that. Mm-hmm. And I just think if we ever are going to get to a point, if we're not going to be an organization that is just going to continue to crack down and become more and more right-wing and conservative, if we are ever going to allow ourselves as an organization and as a people to grow, we are going to have to get over this. We need to stop trying to properly arrange it so we don't have to say sorry. Mm-hmm. I mean, who wants to say sorry? And I look at this in my kids. I will tell you, they do not like to say sorry. I don't like to say I'm sorry. I don't like to have to enter that into my awareness that I've done something that requires me to say sorry.
It's both accountability and integrity, Jenna. Remember when we go back to those trusting values.
And I have some understanding. Like, I can have some compassion for the organization of the church. I can have some compassion for the generation that the leaders of our church were raised in to be just strong, strong, strong leaders. But our world is changing. We are understanding more of the depth of what it means to be a human. And especially the younger generations are not going to have it. Mm-hmm. We need, in order to be able to have any authority, any trust, any sense of responsibility, we have got to let this enter.
And so our friends, I think it was Bob, said, so what would we dream to create? And that is the next part. So let's dream, Jenna.
Yes, can we? We want to really envision, okay, what could this be? If we embrace vulnerability, if we got this vision of how important it is to our spirituality, what could it be in our organization, in any organization, right? Mm-hmm. But specifically for the LDS faith, okay, on an organizational level, it would allow us to do the repair work that we desperately, desperately need to do for all of those who have been spiritually wounded, mm-hmm. from all of our good intentions have been wounded, mm-hmm. because we only understood what worked for the core. It would allow us to do, to make the apologies that we need to make, and a willingness to be influenced by people for whom the system is not working, rather than just saying, no, we got it, we're good, must be you, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. We actually have to let it permeate us, the sorrows and the difficulties. This will allow us into allyship of marginalized communities. Mm-hmm. It would lead us to be able to have an increased transparency that leads to trust. Maybe it would allow us to allow in at least some pastoral training. I don't want to get away from all of our lay leadership and our lay ministry. That is a powerful, powerful, powerful part of our organization. I'm better for having to step into leadership positions and to help other people rather than just relying on the pastor or the bishop to do that, right? But but our leadership roulette is a problem. Mm-hmm. And we need to have some that are trained in pastoral training and pastoral care to hold our hearts. And we need to get vulnerable to be able to do that.
Janet,
yes, can please,
I remember you mentioned to me that one of your hopes and dreams was mm-hmm. that even at the stake level, there could be someone mm-hmm. assigned and trained in pastoral care that could mm-hmm. sit with you like a spiritual director and have no agenda of where you go or what has hurt you or what you love, mm-hmm. but just to have someone there yes. who is trained to do that open-hearted spiritual work.
Absolutely. My dream is to have a spiritual director, much like a calling of a patriarch. I'd also like to have a matriarch, but have a patriarch and a matriarch and a spiritual director. And that spiritual director would have no say in your callings, would have no say in your temple recommend, would have no connection to your belonging, but would be a safe place for you to explore your spirituality in your heart. Yes, that is my dream. if we leaned into vulnerability, we could honor our spiritual development. And this is a phrase from Ken Wilber of how we could be a conveyor belt of faith development or just even consciousness development. We could be a conveyor belt for that. We could hold people through the whole experience and not when someone hits this into the stage four where we start kind of pushing against what we've learned. We could allow them a safe space to be with us and grow in communion with us if that is where their heart takes them. And we could also allow them to leave if that was what they needed to heal their hearts. And we could let them do that with dignity. You know, I would love to have even a formalized ceremony where we honor someone for the work they've done with us. And wish them well on their way and open arms if they ever decide that this can be their spiritual home again. Mm-hmm. That requires extreme vulnerability. Just ask any parent who just wants their children to do what worked for them, right? I heard David White mention this as well, that you cannot live fully in this world without the possibility of having your heart broken. You cannot have children without having your heart broken. And it doesn't have to be dramatic. It can just be that they grow up and move away. This applies to us organizationally as well, right? We have to, it's a vulnerable thing to let our people go and mm-hmm. to differentiate ourselves enough to say, just because it works for me, it does not work for them. And this is another David White quote. I love it. No organization will keep its original identity in a real conversation. That's that willingness to be influenced. Mm-hmm.
There has to be a softening, a shift, and a change. And I want to name, Jenna, that the LDS Church doesn't have to start from scratch. We have so many ecclesiastical brothers and sisters and congregations that have engaged in this work. I mean, Community of Christ comes to mind. They've even worked with our doctrine, our canon. Like, it is possible to do this, but it's going to be vulnerable. And we're going to have to step out of that certainty.
Absolutely. I mean, can you imagine what would happen if we go back to that? Again, this is cultural. Go back to the cultural idea that Joseph Smith and even Brigham Young, I've heard quotes that we are the repository of truth. If it comes from the heathen, the Methodist, it doesn't matter where it comes from. We embrace it because it is good. Mm-hmm. 13th article of faith. Can we get back to that?
Mm-hmm. And can we embrace what has been healthy and good and other faith traditions that would allow us to move forward? We have so much we could learn from that people have already done this work.
Holy envy. We need to lean into some holy envy.
I have so much holy envy. Okay, at the community level, if we're really dreaming, if we allowed vulnerability to be one of our core spiritual practices, there would be more open-hearted solidarity because we would not be policing people's behavior or belief. There would be true belonging versus fitting in. And I love Brené Brown's quote on this. So close your eyes if you're listening. Fitting in is about assessing a situation and becoming who you need to be accepted. We are all been fitting in. But belonging, on the other hand, doesn't require us to change who we are. It requires us to be who we are. this would be the shift. And as a result, true belonging allows us to enhance our authenticity because we're showing up not to like squirm in and fit in to look like we belong, but it's because we're trusting that we actually do as we are. And then there would be unity in diversity. This is where we could create and be a Zion people. It would foster more compassion and more self-compassion. It would be, once again, are you measuring up, but how do I help you become the person you want to become? It would allow for more complexity of our grief and our loss because we wouldn't be having to make it be okay. Could it be what it just is? I talked about this in another presentation, but we don't know how to do grief well. And there's so much we need to grow and learn in because as Mormons, especially awakening and faith transitioning Mormons, we're stuck in non-finite grief. The grief is cyclical. And as a community, if we better understood vulnerability, there would be a space for greater healing.
Absolutely. And can you imagine looking at that list? I think we should give this list to people if they're trying to understand what ministering is. This mm-hmm. is what ministering looks like. And actually, I think it's the easiest entry point is mm-hmm. if we can learn to have reciprocal relationships on that level of a ministering relationship, that's a way in.
Mm-hmm. I would agree.
Okay. This is me, family and friends. So this will trickle into our intimate relationships with our family and with our friends, right? If we bring more of an idea of vulnerability where it's appropriate, given the boundaries, given doing this all wisely, all of this needs to be done wisely, people.
And imperfectly.
And imperfectly, and we need to get really good at repair work, and all of that is vulnerable, right? Mm-hmm. So we can establish authentic belonging. I mean, that's really what brings this emotional safety and intimacy and belonging into our lives is when we are able to be in front of someone, be exactly who we are and have that be okay in its imperfection. If we do not learn to love what is imperfect, we do not love anything because this world, perfection is an illusion. It doesn't exist. Mm-hmm. So getting really comfortable with the imperfections in ourselves and others and not even looking at it as an imperfection necessarily, but just looking at it as how life is. This is how life is. It brings increased joy and gratitude. We talked about that when you numb emotions. If we're allowing ourselves into the vulnerability, we're going to feel a wider gamut of the whole thing. But we will feel joy and gratitude in a way that we have not felt in a long time. Mm-hmm.
As we're being truly seen, Jana, absolutely. Like we're being loved for who we are versus right. who they think we are.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. I had an experience on a meditation, a silent retreat where I witnessed someone else's joy mm-hmm. who was farther down this road than I am. And I witnessed, it was a beautiful display of joy. And I looked at it and I said, you know, I have not felt like that since I was probably 5 years old. Because I have been very carefully building up my life so that I didn't have to feel the pain. Mm-hmm. And I didn't mean to numb the joy, but I did. So if we start to open that up in safe ways, it will increase our joy and gratitude. It will reduce our fear and hypervigilance. We do that, right? We do that to increase our certainty so that we don't have to suffer. And with our children, especially with ourselves and with our children, this reduced pressure for perfection and performance. I'm a different parent than I was 6 years ago mm-hmm. because it allows us to be far less about what are my children accomplishing, what are they doing through their lives, what are they going to be, and getting far more in touch with who are they, how can I support them, mm-hmm. how can I watch them make mistakes. Because mistakes are the key to their growth. And how can I be a safe place for them and teach them how to be a safe place for themselves?
It allows you to be curious, right? Versus the judgmental. It yes. really opens that softening space. It's definitely opened that for me. Definitely opened for me. at the personal level, if we can step into this practice, and it's going to be unique and different for all of us about how we do that and in what ways is wise to do that, it increases our capacity for wholehearted living. I also want to name that Brené reminds us that the most wholehearted people, the people that can give their whole hearts, are the ones that are the most boundaried because they know their limits. And they also know what is okay and not okay for them. So think about that as one way to practice wholehearted living is also to practice your boundaries. There's a need for decreased perfectionism. Jana knows that I've struggled with perfectionism for the majority of my young life. Jana as well. And something about the devastation of my faith awakening, one of the benefits was a softening of my perfectionism. It was just this, oh, Sarah, maybe you're more okay than you thought, right? It softened something in me. Something also had to die, which was certainty, and that was a killer. But it's possible. There's a softening invitation here. There's a greater capacity for self-compassion. There's increased capacity to sit in discomfort and full presence because we're having that awakening and dying moment all the time. Right? It's a practice in sitting in discomfort without having to do anything with it other than witnessing and asking ourselves, what's next? Invites new conversations with the concept of faith. Instead of it being about what do I know for sure, the question begins and turns and softens into what do I want to believe in? What resonates with my values and my soul? It moves from an external sense of power to an internal sense of power and authority. It allows us to begin trusting our internal authority. It allows us to honor our unique spiritual needs, our unique spiritual values. And Jana, you and I have seen with clients as well as with ourselves, it opens a greater capacity for healing.
Absolutely. And I would just add one thing, which is we are so used to having it all laid out for us. We have, the path is laid out for us. And then what I hear a lot in the community is, well, I feel myself heading into stage 4 or 5, you know, into these later stages of development, but I need to see someone else doing it. Mm-hmm. And this is the thing that I think we all need to understand about that. Is that once you get to that place, there is no path. A poet once said, there is no path. You make the path by walking. Mm. By walking, you make the path.
So beautiful.
So if you're finding yourselves grappling with this, it is, I just want to validate it. It's totally normal. It's the only way we've known how to do things. Mm-hmm. And yes, look for mentorship. Look for people who are doing it. But look for mentors who honor the way you do it. Mm-hmm. Because it is not going to look the same for each person.
Let's talk about some examples, Jana, of practices where we yoke that vulnerability and spirituality. Prayer and meditation. Values work. When I say values work, I mean getting very clear about our 5 values that are really speaking to us with the permission that our values can shift and change. What is unique about value work is not one value of social justice is not less important than the value of obedience. What's different is how it matters to us. Boundary setting, which we've discussed, journaling. If you're scared to see what you have to say, I want you to try it because it's actually what you need to hear. I remember a phase in my own experience where I did not want to journal because I did not want to be honest and see it on the page, right? Journal work is a way for us to step in and see our soul on paper. Curiosity. If we can lay down judgment and just get curious, what do I love about my spiritual life? Where I've come from, where do I want to go, right? Getting curious is a softening practice. Practice joy and self-care. We cannot do this work if all we're going to sit in is the wound. We have to practice joy and really consider what self-care is. And I hate to break it to you, it's going to be more than like just a yoga class a day or a week or a month or a year, right? It's thinking really, self-care is getting very acutely aware of what do I need to honor my needs in this moment? And then in this moment. And then I love the internal questioning of What are our spiritual wounds? What do we need to name and honor and grieve? And at the same time, where are our spiritual longings? Because if we go to where our longing is, that is our next step for us to know where to go. It will tell us. And that might be community. That might be, I need support. I need freedom. I need space. I need whatever you need. Go where your longing is telling you. That's going to tell us something. We can get curious about that.
Absolutely. Witnessing practices. So one of the most powerful things that can help us down this road is being witnessed. We saw that in the Hamilton clip. You see what that what happens when someone sees you in all of your mess and all the wounds, the darkest, deepest wounding places, and makes a safe space for you to do that. And these are some examples of people who can do that for you. Get a therapist, a coach, a spiritual director, good friends, authentic community. You can do this in community. I have been so fortunate to find some really authentic community through retreats and groups who meet, who are open to this journey. Sunstone is one of them, where it was one of the first spaces where I could just say whatever was on my mind and have that be okay. That is healing. And we can, when we speak the wounds, when we speak the shame, it dissolves in the light of day. Mm-hmm. In a way that I can't explain. This is the mystical journey. This is the Living School language coming out of me. But this is James Finley, who is a teacher at the Living School. And he is a retired trauma therapist. So he's a deeply embodied mystic. So this is where these two worlds come together. And this is the wisdom that comes from that. He says, when we risk sharing what hurts the most in the presence of someone who won't invade or abandon us, we learn not to invade or abandon ourselves. That is where the healing is. It is when we speak that we go to the really hard, dark places, and we're able to move through those safely, not in a way that re-traumatizes, but in a really controlled space where we can lean into the edge of it. Just lean into the edge of it and infuse it with love. Mm-hmm. Infuse it with love. That is where the healing begins.
And I want to name that too. Jana and I both, while we provide coaching and or therapy, we also in our own lives are seeking spiritual direction with a spiritual director, because we are wounded healers, right? And so if you need permission to go get help, I'm with you. We're with that. And there is the dance and beauty and vulnerability of being witnessed, and that boundary being held and trust established is the mirror of how we can do it for ourselves.
Absolutely. Which is it takes more than reading the book, right, Sarah? It takes more than knowing.
Darn it.
Knowing the steps. Yeah, it takes actually finding the spaces where we can be witnessed.
Mm-hmm. So beautiful.
Okay, so I just, last poem. This is just an invitation for you to find your courage and find that place of leaning into the discomfort with love to take the next steps on your own spiritual journey. Again, David White, just beyond yourself. It's where you need to be. Half a step into self-forgetting and the rest restored by what you'll meet. There is a road always beckoning. When you see the two sides of it closing together on that far horizon and deep in the foundations of your own heart at exactly the same time. When you see the two sides of it closing together on that far horizon and deep in the foundations of your own heart at exactly the same time. That's how you know it's the road you have to follow. That's how you know it's where you have to go. That's how you know you have to go. But that's how you know. Just beyond yourself. It's where you need to be.
Oh, damn it. That just brings up all the chills. Just beyond yourself.
Beyond that comfort zone. Just beyond yourself. What you can imagine. Just where you can, where the longing takes you and what you can imagine. Just beyond yourself.
Mm-hmm. And because Jen and I are talkers, and it feels like talking to a friend, we're running a little bit behind, so I'm going to do a 1-minute guided imagery and versus a 5-minute. I am trying to develop guided imageries that you can download, so someday those will be available. But I want to just for a minute, for those of you listening, if you can get into a comfortable seated position or pause what you're doing and get to a place where you can safely close your eyes. And just take a few deep breaths. Soften your jaw. Notice where your body is clenching or holding patterns of pain. And with your big next inhale and exhale, soften the body. And I want you to take your energy and your focus to your heart center. Maybe putting your hand on your heart if that feels safe. And invite yourself to be courageous and peel back that heart so you're staring at it with your mind, with your inner knowing. And simply ask yourself, where do you want to go? What is your spiritual longing? Breathe into it. If it's quiet and silent, that's okay. Sometimes our longing is shy. Sometimes our longing scares us. If you can wrap it and name it in one word to yourself, do that now. And then with love and tenderness, put that longing back in your heart. Let it know that you see it. Let you know that you'll honor it as you know how, as you can, and wisely. And when you're ready, taking a few more deep breaths. Allowing yourself to soften and yet return to our present moment. Thanking yourself for pausing and being still. And when you're ready, gently coming back. Deep breath.
Amazing what silence does.
And that's why we avoid it.
Right.
That's why we glorify busyness.
Oh, we do. We hate silence. Mm-hmm. But it's where the magic happens.
So let's do some questions and answers, Janet.
Yes.
CJ, read them away.
Well, so I just went into the question and answer menu to pull them up, and my phone locked up, so I'm rebooting.
Well, we will just help together.
Absolutely, I'll go into it.
Can you see them?
Yeah.
Yes, we can.
Awesome. Go for it.
Let's see, Janet. How do we know how to keep vulnerable while keeping ourselves safe and maintaining our boundaries? I would love to be more vulnerable with others, but doesn't feel safe usually. Difference from oversharing.
Do you want to share some
stuff? Yeah. Well, the difference between oversharing is typically when we overshare, which is so human, and I am like so guilty of it. Brené Brown talks about hotwiring connection. So like, you know how we're trying, like you hotwire a car and you don't even have a key. Like you don't even know if it's your car or you, like we're just trying to make it go fast, right? And get it turned on right now. As Mormons, because we think confession is vulnerability and sharing belief is vulnerable, we can move straight into that. So it's like, okay, Janice, I'm in the middle of a faith crisis and I don't know about Joseph Smith. And I don't, like, we just start oversharing without even having the permission to pause. So what a more appropriate space would be if I'm building a relation of trust with Jana would be, Jana, I'm this is hard for me to talk about. It feels really vulnerable. When is now a good time? I'm wondering, I'm really wrestling with aspects of my faith, and I know that can be really scary to hear. Are you in a space to listen without judgment? Right? Asking for what we need, going into a conversation, sets us both up for better success. Because Jana has the permission to say, actually, I don't think I'm ready for that. And that also has to be respected because that's Jana's boundary. Or Jana can be like, oh, okay, like I got to put the phone down. I got to put the cookies down. Like I'm going to sit down on this one because Sarah's being vulnerable, right? It allows her to be invited in and be more successful in receiving and witnessing what I have to say. So another thing is the people we were once vulnerable with, like that we could say anything to, this is typically our partner or our family, sometimes we have to reconsider who we can share with. And that's a grief and a loss because we're so used to having those people be our people that sometimes we have to really reconsider, actually, who am I safe with and can I practice with them prior to going, let's say, to grandma or dad?
Yeah, and I would also say sometimes it's you can compartmentalize that. Those people can maybe still be your people for other things. You know, if you wreck your car, maybe they're still your person. Mm-hmm. But if you're really looking for someone who can hold your spiritual growth, mm-hmm. it's okay to go somewhere else for that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, love that. I just don't even have anything to add to that. Let's try to get more questions in. Let's see.
Do you want another one, Jenna?
Yeah.
Your statement, the world has a need to change you, mm-hmm. from the poem. I'd like to hear how you manage your own boundaries when you are being treated this way.
Okay. So I think this could come from a couple of different places, right? Sometimes it's an unwelcome change. Sometimes it's someone else's narrative that they're trying to put on you, right? And absolutely you need boundaries for that. When someone else is trying to dictate how you're going to do your journey, this is why I'm saying the safe mentorship in more complex faith journeys are ones that honor the way you are doing it and really know how to listen and validate and support. So I would say there are some really good resources on boundaries out there, and I would say lean into those and learn how to use those effectively. Learn how to say no. Learn how to honor your own narrative. Have a few already formulated sentences that you can use with people who step over those boundaries, and do it in compassionate ways where you just say what you need, mm-hmm. in a very kind way. You know, I just need you to trust me, and this is my journey. I'm not ready, mm-hmm. to share that with you right now. Mm-hmm. I'm doing what I feel is best, and I can understand why that would be scary to you. Mm-hmm. Maybe those are a couple of options. I would also say that we do need to stay open to how life genuinely needs to change us and refine us to transform us into a better person, into a more wholehearted person.
And I know, Jenna, you and I both have had to care less what people think. Absolutely. Which is a really hard, that was as recovering perfectionists, that has been one of the hardest things is,
so hard.
And our sister, a sister St. Glennon says, we need to disappoint others before we disappoint ourselves. Can we practice owning our needs and values and standing in our values and being uncomfortable, which is growth, with that is going to make other people uncomfortable. So I've had to care a whole hell of a lot less. And that has been one of the most painful parts for me. And it's also created a lot more liberation.
Absolutely. Let's take this one. Where do I find one of these spiritual directors? This is a discipline that is new to us in our community, right? We don't do spiritual direction, but it is a beautiful thing. I have a spiritual director.
Same.
There is a directory, sdi.org, mm-hmm. Spiritual Directors International. I personally went through and just chose a few that sounded good, and I met them. I met up with them and had a conversation, and it was kind of like speed dating. Once I found the one, I knew she was the one. So feel free to shop around for this. Mm-hmm. We also know, I know some personally, it can be a wonderful experience to be in the same geographic location with these people, but since COVID, I have not been able to meet with mine personally, and we've been doing it over the phone, and who knew? We found new gifts in that as well. We listen to each other in a different way. Mm-hmm. So don't be afraid to expand your search, mm-hmm. but reach out to me personally. I can give you a few names.
Mm-hmm. Same. As well as, while Jenna and I are not spiritual directors, we definitely create that space of witnessing in our coaching and in my therapy practice, where that you could come and wrestle with your faith and wrestle with your next step and wrestle with your values and your boundaries in a safe space. So while we're acutely aware of our differences and that we are not trained spiritual directors, I want to make sure that you know that that is also part of our professional offering.
And I think that we're out of time. Is that right, CJ?
I really am sorry to say that our time is up.
Okay. We will get to those other questions. Sarah and I will look at them and we will answer them in the app. Mm-hmm. So feel free if you think of some, I'll look at this over the next few days mm-hmm. and answer some questions and engage, and please reach out to us personally. Yeah.
This is a way to connect with us. We both work for Symmetry Solutions. You can reach us, screenshot this on your phone, reach out to us via email. Facebook and Instagram is an option. And at the very core, we want you to know that we bless you on your journey and you are not alone. All our love.
Thank you both so much. Thanks everyone for joining us this afternoon and for supporting Sunstone. Have a wonderful rest of the symposium, and we'll see you next year. Yeah.